All right, so haven't seen you for a while, Andrew. You got any burning questions?
I'm not. Something will probably spark. Something will probably come up. Not at the moment. I've been working through the inheritance videos, which are awesome. Loving that.
Okay, good. Excellent. All right. So, has anyone else got a question then, or somewhere you want to start?
Go ahead, AC, if you got something. Oh, there's Ann.
Okay. Someone got something? Otherwise, we'll have a short time together. So.
Okay, Mike, I guess the question, I guess we're having, as we've kind of looked at the ecclesia, everybody I think has heard the definition of an ecclesia, the governing body, how where it came from, how it started. And I think as we try to put things together as an ecclesia, we're kind of wondering, how do you see that function? I mean, how do you see in this day and time an ecclesia functioning with what we know today?
Okay, interesting question. Okay, well, I think our, I mean, I like using the word, ecclesia, ecclesia, from the perspective that it removes a lot of the history with the word church. And church being an Anglo-Saxon word, not a Greek one, not a Hebrew one, has a connotation that is very negative in the normal sort of course of the world. It's normally quite negative, the word, because it's got connotations with our past. And even I've come across ministries and people who won't call themselves church, even though they are a church, because of the history that they've had with church. The way they've had a history with being hurt, damaged, things not working out well. And so I think, the word ecclesia has a new ring to it in a sense, and doesn't come with the baggage. But what is it? Now, we could say that, the meaning of it is a gathering together of people according to a blueprint, really, according to a purpose. When they formed the original ecclesia, they had, a bench of three, and they needed 10 to form a house. So they had 10 and 3 and 7 make 10, and that was the foundation. Now, obviously, that knowledge has been lost. And now is being restored. So, where Paul went around and shared the gospel with people, ecclesia formed in the cities. They also formed in people's houses. And so, you had the ecclesia of the city, which was the full gathering of the people in the city. You had the ecclesia in people's houses where they met day to day. They broke bread together. They shared the apostles' teaching and fellowship and prayer. Just the lifestyle of being together, gathered around that purpose that they had established, and so they just, that was it. They lived it. They understood. I think there's a lot of things that the Bible does not actually express because it didn't need to, because they already knew. It didn't need to go into a lot of the detail because they knew that anyway. It was mostly answering the problems that came up according to various cultural issues, people wearing head coverings, angels turning up, various things that answered issues of sin and those type of things. And so we haven't got a record which says it does this, it looks like this. So we have principles. in that Jesus said he would build his church. He would build his ecclesia. So if Jesus was going to build it, what was our role? Well, our role was to make disciples, because that's what he said to do, go into all the world and make disciples, or to disciple the nations. According to what were we to disciple them? Well, the things that Jesus taught his disciples. And he taught his disciples how to live in the kingdom, and how to demonstrate the kingdom, how to that the kingdom was at hand. And, you know, they're reflecting heaven on earth was through basically having a vision, because Paul later said, you know, the foundations of every ecclesia is apostles and prophets. What do apostles and prophets bring? They bring the word of God of what something is intended to be out of heaven, and they bring, apostles bring the blueprints or the government to establish what the word of God is out of heaven, and they become the foundations which then release people to become living stones. That is what an ecclesia is, a group of living stones that are joined together with the bricks and mortars, sort of the mortar of love, joy, peace, loving one another, all those basic things that Jesus said, that this is how you live, demonstrated in relationship with one another. So for me, that's really where it starts, in relationship. Relationship established around an apostolic prophetic blueprint that's come out of heaven. It's not just relationship for anything, it's relationship for purpose. And I think this is where people tend to sort of fall down on this, is that if there isn't a clarity of vision, then people just do whatever comes along. If there is a blueprint, a governing blueprint from heaven, then it gives the boundaries for how things are to be outworked in that governmental way. So that blueprint would carry the, this is our calling, this is our governmental sphere, this is our seven mountains, whichever you want to say, the blueprint contains the purpose of God for that gathering. Now today, that can be in a particular house, it can be in a particular region or a particular city. We tend to have broken it down because of the issue of doctrine and falling out over what we believe. So, you know, there's thousands and thousands of denominations because we all fell out with what we believed. So we gather around doctrine, and that isn't a good thing to gather around, because when doctrine changes, everyone falls out. You know, so the best thing to gather around is what God says. It's not doctrine, it's just blueprint of how you build. You know, is this living stone going to fit into this building? It will if it carries within its heart something which is aligned with the vision. If that person doesn't carry in their heart and according to their destiny, something fits in with this larger destiny, and they can find their place of how to outwork their destiny within this sort of blueprint, then they won't be part of that. How can they be a living stone that doesn't fit? So we've got to be able to have a foundation which shares the revelation of the blueprint so that people can say, yeah, I want to fit into that in a sense. I want to express my destiny because that will shape it. And so I'm not really talking about the vision shoehorning people into a particular vision, but sharing the vision so that people will see, hey, I can be myself here and express my destiny here because my destiny is in alignment. I am resonating with this because actually my destiny is calling me to outwork it, to shape what this looks like. Because you can have, let's say, 100 living stones, and those 100 living stones could make how many shapes? You know, it's like, okay, here's the foundation, but I believe it's people that give rise to the shape of any ecclesia. What does it look like in its outworking? Its outworking is how people begin to express their destiny. So, okay, let's say there's seven mountains, and you have a bench of three who are established in seven mountains. You have an angel of the house that brings agreement between heaven and earth for the outworking of that within people's lives. And then you have people who begin to say, wow, that's the mountain that I feel drawn to. And then you get a bench of three on that mountain, which releases their seven mountains. And then you get people drawn to those mountains. Wow, that's my heart. And all of a sudden, you get people shaping what that looks like. Not the bench of three. They've just established the blueprint. It's that it's people fulfilling their destiny. So, for instance, okay, let's say that one of the mountains of government and the spheres is healing. Now, the bench of three brings this revelation that one of our mountains is healing. Then you get people who, wow, that's my destiny to be involved in healing. I feel called to the government of bringing healing. Now, the bench of three don't say to that person, right, I want you to establish this, 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 and this in healing. What they say is, go into the realms of heaven, engage for the blueprint for the healing mountain. What are the seven spheres of government of healing that are going to be released to that mountain? And then you will be able to release that vision for the healing mountain. And we're doing this as a church right now. We're going through each person who's on their mountain is sharing every week or every other week what the vision for that mountain is to draw people, say, wow, I want to be part of that. And so then as people get drawn to the healing area, then they begin to express, wow, I want to establish healing rooms. I feel that part of our mandate is healing rooms, or our mandate is emotional healing, or our mandate is to bring a health center, or whatever it might be. And then as that vision then gets released, then the support of the bench of three and each of the people on the mountains is to encourage the person to begin to develop that and outwork it. So it depends on what people's individual destinies or mandates are to the nature of how that ecclesia looks. Because as those people fulfill their destinies, they will shape what it looks like. Because it looks like what we do, in effect. You know, that's what people see. They see what we're doing. What we do is in alignment with the mandate from heaven and the sphere of government, but how it looks will be totally different depending on the people who are actually involved. Now that brings it down to living stones, not a stone that we put into a particular wall and we cement them in and then they can't move, but a living stone who's able to grow, develop, get bigger, stronger, so the whole building can grow because it's flexible and expanding because of the nature that we're all growing. So it's not a rigid fixed thing, it's an expanding, growing, living organism that grows in proportion to people's growing in their destiny and their calling and their life and outworking it. So it's very much living, a living organism. Now, you can also have, I believe, ecclesias now because of technology, and because of we're living in the information age where the different revelation is being opened around the world, you can now have ecclesias that are gathered not just for a physical location in a house or a town or a region, but you can have ecclesias that are gathered around visionary purposes for other things. And that expands our understanding of what ecclesias are according to the blueprints rather than our previous things. Well, they must be this. It must look like this. It must meet here. It must do this. It must do that. Now, there'll be a people who are gathered together all over the world, but they're called according to a purpose and a blueprint that may minister to the whole world in the area of, I don't know, worship or finances or whatever else, you know, and they may well be gathered according to a particular blueprint that people get drawn to. And that, I think that is what is different in what we would say now, you know, and we just got to be prepared to find the blueprints and then establish the foundations that those blueprints can then release people into becoming part of, and finding, hey, I feel I'm part of this. I'm actually this, you know, rather than, well, here's the church, it has this vision, do this, do that, do the other. No, actually, we want to release people, so it has to be modeled after the pattern of heaven, which is obviously the mansion of God, which looks like that, but on earth reflected, that looks like that. So the bench of three are foundational to release people, and there is no limit, in effect, to how that can go, because there's no top to it. You know, because God's kingdom is always increasing, isn't it? There's a never end to the increase of his government. So the width of the mountain of God is sort of, it might start like that, but because it's increasing, it's going like this, and therefore what's on earth may start like that, but is going like that, because it's patterning after the increase of the government of God in heaven on earth, hence our expansion of bringing heaven onto earth and seeing the garden of God fill the earth and those type of views that come out of God's purpose to bring terraforming to the earth. So Ecclesia, you know, I just love that it's being redefined in a sense after heaven, and therefore whenever we're looking to establish Ecclesia, we must be really careful that we don't make assumptions. Oh, well, we'll do this. Oh, why will we do this? Well, we've always done it. Now let's get a mandate for everything we do. Then there's no, oh, well, we're just following a pattern that's we've had ingrained within the system of religion, to actually every ecclesia is different, will look different, will be different, will do things differently because it has a individual, unique blueprint from God. And, you know, and that's a challenge because we are so used to doing things the way we used to do them. And for me, this was a challenge personally because, you know, I was used to bringing vision and envisioning people, but most of the stuff I would do and people would get alongside and be part of it. I've had to release and relinquish that to let other people do it, you know. And it's really interesting because, you know, I think we've now had two people share their mountains. They wouldn't have shared them anyway like I would have shared them. They didn't use a PowerPoint. They didn't use this. They didn't use that. But they shared their heart, and great, people were drawn to their heart. My wife is sharing on Sunday because she's on one of our mountains. She definitely won't do it the way I would do it. So for me, I just sit there and say, brilliant, go for it. You know, actually, be yourselves. And that is what other people will be drawn to, the revelation that God is releasing through you, to be yourself and to do it your way, so we're not clones. You know, I don't want people just to do things the way I do it. Well, before, that was the only option because that was the whole model. The person models something and everyone does the same. No, it's about releasing people to be them in their destiny and outworking that in their lives. So I don't know if that's...
Go ahead. That was a great answer. That really gave me a lot of definition to
that was good.
How it looks. Thank you, Mike.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. All right. Anything else?
Well, Mike, I'll jump in here then. Does somebody else have... Andra, I want to give you time. You haven't been on for so long.
I know. Thanks. I do have something, but I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to say it exactly. I don't know. I'll just go ahead, go ahead, Peter.
All right. Well, Mike, I have a question. You know, I know we're talking about ecclesia, which has to do with, you know, like the spiritual or... you know, the function of the gathering together in you know, well, everything you just described. But what about other aspects of life? You know, like, for instance, business and stuff like that. How do you see all of that working out? I mean, I know you guys have a whole program there where you're helping people find jobs and, you know, get their lives together and all of that kind of stuff. outside, well, I mean, it is all part of church or part of ecclesia, but specifically more along the lines of money, finances, work, business, stuff like that.
Well, I think that in a sense you can't separate up our Christian lives. You know, we are who we are, and therefore each of us has a governmental, seven governmental spheres. Those governmental spheres are not outworked independently of our relationships together, but as part of it. So I am in the ecclesia, not just when I'm gathered together on a Sunday or on a Wednesday, whenever it might be. I am part of the ecclesia, a living stone, every day. And so when I go into the workplace, let's say, I am still a representation of the vision, the blueprint of the ecclesia. I outwork it because one of my spheres of government may be business or it may be my workplace. So I begin to administrate heaven on earth as a demonstration of God's kingdom rule through what I do. Because, you know, Paul said, whatever we do it for him. And, you know, and again, that challenges our whole religious mindset of religious and secular. There is no religious and secular. In fact, there is no division of anything. You know, anything we divide or separate, heaven and earth, religious, secular, all those things, those dichotomy of things, is Greek. It's not Hebrew. Everything in Hebrew is circular. So we're always part of what's going on. We can't separate it. So some people value, well, what I do for church as different from what I do in my workplace. All the same. It is church. It's me expressing who I am as part of that to outwork that into my workplace to bring the kingdom of God there, the rule of God, righteousness, blessing, peace, all those things. There is no separation between it. And therefore, in everything, we are who we are, and we outwork that in each sphere that we're called to govern, whether it's in our family. You know, people say, oh, well, you know, this whole thing, well, you put God first, then you put your family, and then you put church. No, that's just, again, separating everything up. It's all the same. It's like, I need to live like I'm a stick of rock. You know, we have these things called sticks of rock, which are candy, you call it, and in the middle they have things written, and you used to be able to pick them up when you went to seaside places or holiday places. They'd have the name of the thing right through the rock. Wherever you chop the rock up, chop it into pieces, we used to share it out as kids, basically the same thing would be right through all the stick of rock, right through the candy, the same thing written all the way through. Wherever you cut it, exactly the same. And that's exactly what it's like. Wherever we are, whatever we're doing, whether we're home, whether we're gathered together for something, whether we're in a workplace, whether we're working out our finances, whatever, we should be exactly the same person, ruling and bringing the kingdom of God through that aspect of our government. And, you know, for individuals, we all have different spheres. Some of us do have sort of a sphere which is about bringing, I don't know if you're part of the seven of a church or the three of a church, that will be part of your governmental sphere. But you will be the same outworking it. And, you know, this is really why people affect the overall ecclesia by what they do. You know, Paul made it sort of clear, well, if one hurts, all hurt. If we're all one's joyful, we should all be joyful. Well, I think we sort of really don't apply that literally, but in reality, how we live on a day-to-day basis affects the whole, even though we don't necessarily always see it. If I sin, then I'm bringing access to that sin into the body. And actually, because I'm in Christ, and Christ is in me, and you're in Christ, and Christ is in you, then we have an interaction between each other, which is a spiritual dynamic, which affects each other. And we affect each other, and we affect the kingdom by how we live and how we move and what we do. So, you know, I just don't separate anything. It's just me, who I am, my identity as a son of God, demonstrating kingdom rulership through how I live. And therefore, it's important how I function everywhere, really. I mean, is that sort of what you were getting at?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. I probably need to think like Andre. I need to think about that question some more.
Peter, can I jump in here? Maybe. First of all, the last few things that Mike said, I'll have to say they don't sound very American. But but I can go with that. Yeah, I hear you saying that in so many words, there really is no sacred or religious and secular dichotomy. I mean, that just for us really should not exist. It should be everything.
Yeah.
Peter, for the sake of maybe contrast, mm-hmm. with your question, are you getting at something like this? I mean, I think what you're, you know, with governmental, bench of three, the sevens, ecclesia, it's this whole new thing, form. I think what you're, maybe, to push back here, that you're not saying is, hey, it's not that we dictate what people do. It's not that we dictate what people where they live. It's not that we dictate who they marry. It's not that we dictate, you would dictate that they give all their, pool all the money together and everybody lives in a commune. That's over here. I mean, I think you're saying, court, you know, it's not that, but what is it? I don't know if that's what you're, I may be way off, but I'm just kind of intuiting what your question, maybe it's somewhere in there. It's like, you know, you're moving into new governmental spheres, and it's like, you know, what's that realm look like? Is that sort of maybe what you're getting at, or am I just way off the base?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting sort of development of it. I mean, in reality, yeah. Any form of government within the ecclesia is to release people into their destiny. It's not to define what that destiny is or to determine what they do in their daily life. It does not provide a covering for people that tells people what to do. People do not have to be obedient to what someone else's opinion is. Essentially, it's to provide a foundation on which people can grow and develop. And therefore, we're always wanting to point people back to what is God calling you to do. Your covering in life is Jesus. There's no mediator. What we mustn't do is set up anything which is mediatorial. And I think that's the key. Not to mediate between God and man, but to continually practice opening the veil and in connecting people to God themselves. That they can outwork their apostolic calling, God's kingdom in them, their vision, their destiny as a whole. So they actually determine what the whole looks like by them being obedient to working out the vision that God's given them within the context of that we're all sharing something of the heart of God and call together in this. So it's definitely not telling people what to do. Is there a dimension where we have all things in common? Yeah. Does that mean a common purse? Not necessarily, but it does mean a common heart to love one another. If I have something and someone has got a need, then I would be asking God, should I meet that need? Is this my call in this part to help each other in what we do and exchanging who we are to help other people and receiving from each other because we need each other. It's not independence. It's interdependence. It's not dependence either, because that can create codependence and wrong relationships. But there's an interdependence where God will use each other in the process of maturing and discipling one another. And that may be in modeling something. It may well be in relational connecting with people and helping each other. And so getting alongside someone that is in need that you can support and help. And then being got alongside by others who can support and help you to find God's solution to the situations that we all face. Not do it for people, because again, that's mediatorial, but to help point people to Jesus to find the answers for them. And obviously helping, sometimes that means ministering to one another and helping each other. I think there is something about the nature of the kohal, or the Hebrew sort of house, that was family, and you don't want to see family in distress, or you don't want to see family in trouble. So I think there is a sense that there's loads of one another's in the New Testament. When it talks about people being in relationship in Ecclesias, there's a lot of one another's, love one another, bear one another's burdens, pray for one another, support one another. Lots of one another's in which there's an interchange and interaction of relationship and gifts and abilities to one another to ensure that everybody is being able to fulfill their destiny in God and helping each other in that process of growth and maturity. You know, iron sharpens iron. You know, sister rub and brother sandpaper. That's all part of, there's some rough edges to be knocked off each other so that we fit better together. You know, and all that's part of, I think, the relational process that we need to go through, maintaining love, maintaining an attitude of, this is done in love for the glory of God primarily, so that we will be able to fulfill all our callings in God and destiny, so that the kingdom will be seen, you know, on earth as it is in heaven, and that we will there be a demonstration of the rule and government of God in love that people will want, rather than there's a whole bunch of religious hypocrites who live one way on Sundays and totally different in the week. I see them at work, they blah, 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 blah. I mean, I've heard it all like that. We probably all heard it like that, because there has been this separation and everything else. And therefore, once we do recognize that whatever I do affects everyone else in some way or another, then I am responsible for my life to ensure that my life brings blessing to people, not cursing. And therefore, I look at what I do in a more circumspect way, and I don't just do things lightly without regard to the body. Because that was the whole nature of breaking bread, where Paul said, look, some of you are sick, some of you have died because you've not had proper regard for the body. It affects that way, because God knows that what I do brings an opening for blessing or cursing. You know, if I'm operating in hidden sin, then that hidden sin will give the enemy access into those that I'm a part of to bring negative things. So I'm not just responsible for me, I'm also responsible for how my life affects other people, which is not a heavy thing, it's just the reality, and therefore I want to make sure I want to live a holy lifestyle to bring blessing to others, and I want other people to live holy lifestyles to bring blessings to me. Now, you know, in reality, we're all human, and therefore we will get it wrong at times, and we're on a journey, and a journey to being transformed into the glory of God by one degree of glory to another. So it's a process, and on the journey we must have towards each other an attitude which is loving, gracious, forgiving, so that we can maintain relationship in the process, not fall out all the time. And that means thinking the best about each other, you know, and in that's the culture of honor. Having a culture that honors the differences, recognizing that people are different from me, and I celebrate that difference, not criticize it. So within the body, you'll have the seven redemptive gifts functioning. So, you know, I come from the total opposite scale for mercy. My wife happens to be mercy gift. It's like we had huge battles until we understood that actually we're supposed to be different, and we're supposed to complement each other and help each other see different perspectives, not actually always see the same way. Now, you know, it took a while to figure that one out, quite a number of years, in actual fact. And in reality, therefore, all of us has to have that culture where we honor each other. And Jesus said, where you honor a prophet, you receive the reward of a prophet. And where we honor each other in the body, and we receive the benefit and blessing and the reward of that person and their gifts and who they are and their identity as making up the whole. And when we are operating in a culture of honor, we have to be willing to be honest, open, transparent, vulnerable to each other, give each other permission to help us grow, point out the blind areas and the blind self areas so that actually we can grow and change, because God uses other people in the process. Now, if I know that I'm loved and accepted and that I have honor from people, then I can receive it from them. If I think they are judging me, criticizing me, trying to put me down to make themselves feel better, then it's difficult to receive things. So we must make sure that there's no defensiveness. Let's have no fences between each other. Then there's no offense, there's no defense. We're all on the same side, we're all in the same team, not fighting, not competing. Also within it, we don't have to compare ourselves with anybody else in a negative way. You know, I want to be like them because they have a more prominent position. It's just all that, that's all the negative trading stuff that comes out when we start to get to the nitty-gritty of relationships. And so, yeah, I feel that this is a key thing that we need to grow and to develop, because if we're going to have cities of refuge, they need to function this way. You know, it's not just the supernatural side of it, it's the actual reality of our relationships that have to be real. You know, not airy-fairy and, oh, everything's wonderful when it isn't, but being truthful, being honest, being open, and being real, so that we can actually make sure that we're operating according to the purposes of God in love and everything else. I think how I see it, but
well, so Mike, yeah, that's kind of right along the question of what I was thinking as we're talking about, you're talking about this, because I see a lot of dysfunction, I guess I would say dysfunctional families in the body, and a lot of judging and, you know, accusations and things like that. I think that it's fairly unhealthy from a certain perspective at this point. And I agree with everything that you're saying. I just see a lot of people in conflict that don't really resolve the conflict. I think we need a better understanding of how to do that. But I guess my question is, through conflict and accusation and judgment, is there a time where people may be called out from that religious system, you know, through, you know, the religious mindset to, I guess, you know, move on? Or is it something that somebody should really stay in? I'm just saying, I know a lot of people that are leaving the church basically because of this religious mindset where there's no, doesn't seem to be a foundation of true love and relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I personally see the religious system as not being the true church anyway. So those people that are leaving a religious system, they're just getting out of what is going to be judged by God anyway, personally. I'm not saying they should leave with wrong attitudes, not having dealt with the issues of why, but if something is a religious system, why do you want to stay in it? I think the hope for a lot of people is, well, I can change it from within. I've never seen it changed from within yet. It just doesn't work that way. If there's foundations within it, particularly if it's a denominational foundation, it is nigh on impossible to change it. That's why people have to leave. I mean, I personally had to leave the Brethren Church 20 years ago or more now, because I couldn't be myself in it. As much as I wanted to, as much as I tried my hardest to encourage, I couldn't. And it wasn't until I left and it actually established something on a different foundation that, you know, that was, I was able then to grow and to mature into different things. You know, I'm not saying that I love the church. You know, I'm not knocking it in the sense I want it, but I want it to be the true church that reflects heaven, not a religious system that reflects the traditions of men. That isn't to me ecclesia. It's a religious system, very little different than any other religious system. It has its rules, regulations, traditions, rather than a living relationship with the living God that we get living mandates every day to establish heaven on earth. Totally different thing. You know, I work with people from all sorts of denominational things in being part of, you know, the local church. You know, my desire, for the last number of years, I've really, really worked hard at encouraging people to embrace a new way of doing things. I've only come across two others who are willing to embrace that, and we formed a bench of three, you know, and in a process of doing that, because it just doesn't work. You can't keep serving two things. You either serve God or you serve the religious system. It doesn't work. So, yes, I think a lot of people are realizing that what they're in isn't what their spirit is really drawing them to. They just haven't found anywhere that they can engage yet. And that's why it's down to those who are hearing the sound of heaven and are beginning to come together around that sound to have open access to bring to enable people to come and find the reality of it. Now, it has to be real, and that's not perfect. You know, we're not perfect yet, therefore there's going to be things that we have to continue to work through, but we work it through on the basis of putting into practice maintaining relationship. You know, it's like the problem is people in the religious system don't think they can maintain relationship if they don't agree 100% with everything. Hence, all the different, you know, First Baptist, Second Baptist, Fourth Baptist, Fifth Baptist, 55th Baptist in one place, all because they've got slightly different tweaks of this, that, and the other. You know, well, the reality is, it isn't about me agreeing with someone else's opinion or someone else agreeing with my opinion. It's actually having the same heart to bring glory to God together according to a heavenly blueprint. And that is the key. You have to find the heavenly blueprint that you're supposed to fit into. You know, and then you then have the freedom to shape that blueprint according to your destiny being outworked. So, you know, I know that judgment is coming to the household of God. I know that a line is going to be drawn. I know it's a line of fire. I've seen it in the spirit. I see it approaching faster and faster, and people will have the choice to say, I want to be on this side of the line, because, you know, like Joshua gave people a choice. As for me and my house, we are going to serve the Lord, but actually you need to choose. Choose you this day who you will serve. And that declaration is coming out of heaven. It won't come to the whole body all the same day. It's a period of time, because God gives those first who have the revelation the chance to say yes. You know, and he's continually wanting and giving opportunities for people to embrace the new order that he's releasing. But I know it's coming, and I know it's going to cause warfare, and I know the religious system will oppose the new order that God is wanting to establish. That's just the way it's always been, and I think it will be that way, which is why God is raising up a new order, even of those who have been of the old order, the apostolic order and the prophetic order and the different things that have been in the fivefold ministries and those things. They're all going to get a choice to, are you willing to embrace something new and cross over into a new dimension of government to establish that on the earth? You know, I have been given a quest by God. You know, I met with Enoch a couple of times, and he gave me this quest, and I guess I fulfilled it, because then he basically said, right, now you've passed the test, now you get to do the real thing. Oh no. You know, and you know, I don't like sort of bringing a sword of judgment, but it's been given into my hand, you know, and I find it's not my personality to be that way. I'm quite quiet you know, in a sense, and I'm not going to try and bring that. But Jesus said he came to bring a sword on the earth. You know, it would divide families. It would divide things. You know, that's what he said. You know, so I sort of feel in this that I've been given personal responsibility for something, and that really is to remove some of the veils and masks that are over what we call the church that actually mask it from what it really is and stop it being what it really is, which is a reflection of heaven on earth, a house of God, you know, a gate of heaven. Individually, corporately, that's who we are. And there are so many religious doctrines and traditions which rob us of our true identity, and those things need to be brought into the light and exposed, not to be negative about people, but to help people see that they're serving a, well, it's like, you know, a whole load of people starving, have no food to eat, and they're dying, and yet there's a whole load of cows wandering around that they can't kill because they're sacred. And there are so many doctrines which are causing death to people and death to the church, which actually need slaying. And those sacred cow doctrines, they offend me. Now, I have to be very careful that I don't take offense at people, because it's not people, it's a religious system that they're slaved to, and the religious mindsets that they have strongholds about. So it's loving people enough to speak the truth in love to them, to help them see that they're being enslaved to a system which is stopping them fulfilling their purposes in the kingdom. And, you know, I find that quite hard. And, you know, and I'm being asked more and more questions that before I wouldn't answer, that now I'm having to answer, because God has sort of said, you have to answer these things, because you have to be able to present the truth in such a way that it presents people with a choice. And, you know, and some of those sacred cows are very, very religiously ingrained into people, so that they couldn't even possibly see that it could not be right. You know, now I've had to do that in my own life over and over and over again. You know, I've had to let go of things I held precious and defended, and, you know, I had to let it go. Now, that means that I have to remain teachable and open, and I don't create religious traditions of my own. But seeing that I'm a progressive journey of revelation, that are stepping stones to eventually being like Jesus in the image of him and everything else. And on the way, I have to shed some things to be like him. Now, I don't find that difficult anymore, but I've had to come to that point by going through that over years of holding things lightly, not defending them, not operating in the two things that Jesus warned the church about, the leaven of Herod and the Pharisees. And they are the two things that we must at all costs ensure do not infiltrate our relationships. Now, we know the leaven of the Pharisees was a religious, legalistic approach to God. And the leaven of Herod was a political, using the church as a political system to get its own way and to control people. And when you come up against the political spirit, you can't fight it, because all you do is give it more fuel for the fire. But you have to maintain, this is what I believe, this is my stance, that's it. You know, when it comes to religious spirit, you can't fight it with the same thing. You have to come in an opposite spirit. And I think we're having to find ways that try and do that. And at times, I have to put my hands up, you know, I've been less than gracious. Or I may have said things in such a way that didn't help people. But I am passionate about it because I know that I'm given this quest to be involved in this process to bring as many people into freedom from that religious and political spirit as possible so that they can be them. You know, and there are sort of layers and layers and layers which are being peeled back. But I don't know if that sort of helps, but I know it's difficult when you're in these situations, but I'm obviously in touch with a lot of people all over the world that are not part of what they would see as a local gathering of people because they just cannot find any blueprints that looks like anything that they are. You know, and that's very, very difficult. Now, years ago, I would have said, well, you need to go somewhere because it's the right thing to do. Now I would say, don't. Because you can connect up with other people around the world who can encourage you to eventually find the place where you fit, whether that's a physical location or a spiritual one. You can find somewhere because God is drawing people together because people are being drawn around the sound. You know, and that will be a fresh expression of that pattern of heaven, you know, that we can be part of. And, you know, for those who are called, go and get the blueprint and start your own. If you have any apostolic prophetic calling in your life, go and get a blueprint and form a blueprint and call those to come and gather around that blueprint and start your own. That would be my encouragement to a lot of people. You know, if you can't do that, then join with us. You know, we are open for people to consider that they are part of us as a group. We're not yet fully able to support them the way we would like, but we're working towards being able to offer groups to gather around us as an ecclesia so that they can feel, hey, at this point in time, until maybe something else emerges that I can be part of, at least I feel that I'm connected to people who know and who understand and who can support me in what I'm doing. And so we are doing that. There are a number of people who feel called as part of this gathering, and we honor that and we support them. We are looking to develop people here with the ability to connect up with them around the world so that they can give them actual one-to-one or group support as well, so that it's not just, well, you listen to the teaching but you don't talk to anybody. Actually, no, it's about relationship. Whichever way, it has to be relational, but we can relate in different ways now, you know, and I know a number of people feel that, and they're looking for that, you know. We've not sort of greatly publicized, I guess I've just done it now, but, you know, we've not sort of put that on our website exactly because we don't want to disappoint people in the level of support we can give them. But it's our aim and our goal to develop the relational connections here so that people can grow wherever they are around the world. You know, not as a substitute for what's going on locally, but if there isn't going on anything locally, and it's not a substitute, well, I can't get on with people, so I'm just going to do this virtually, therefore I won't have to have face-to-face with anybody. That motivation will never work. If we've got issues with people, we need to work them out. Whether we leave old systems or not, we mustn't leave with unresolved things from our perspective. Other people may have them unresolved, but we mustn't be unresolved in our own hearts. So, yeah.
Do you think part of the issue, I don't know that most churches know there is a blueprint, or that they even have the blueprint to attract people to?
No, because they're mostly coming out of an old religious system. Some people do. Some of the newer expressions of things, they had a vision. Someone had a vision. They planted something with a vision. Well, it's basically that's the same thing. They just have to outwork it in a new perspective, which is heavenly rather than earthly. And they have to make sure they're not on top of a mountain, but they're on the foundations releasing people. But, you know, the Bible in Ephesians, you know, 2 makes it really clear. The foundations of the church are apostles and prophets. It's always been so. It's just Some churches see, well, that was Peter originally, and we still have the same foundation that he set up, and that would be, you know, one of the well-known churches that we know. And others have, again, just taken, oh, well, that means that we have the Word of God as our foundation because that was written by the apostles, and now there are no apostles, so we can't have it as a day-to-day thing now. So there are various, again, religious perspectives and mindsets around that which hinder it being real, living, and active, and people finding a specific blueprint for today. But I would encourage people to see something that they feel, hey, you know, I resonate with this. You know, and I wouldn't encourage people to flog a dead horse, as we say over here. It's like, if there's no life in it, there is no life in it. You know, it isn't going to come back to life. You know, there is no life going to come back to dead religious systems. Just true representations of relationship with God. So let's stop trying to breathe life into something which is dead in that sense. You know, Jesus did make it clear, you don't put a patch on a new wineskin. You know, it doesn't work. It needs to be a new wineskin, not an old one patched up. You know, and I know people are loyal and have sown years into certain things and feel so desperate that they want something to succeed. I just don't think that the majority of what is there is reflecting heaven. I'm not saying that we're perfect. By any means, we're not. We're working through these issues. You know, we're trying to forerun this, and we find it really hard. But we're making headway, and, you know, we're working it through as a culture of honor, and we're making sure that we bring the things to the surface to so that we can work them out as we're going through them relationally. But it's hard work. You know, I'm not going to be honest with you. It's hard work to do it this way. It's so easy to have rules and regulations. But that is not a culture of honor. You know, it's not how it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One more thing. Do you have a process I know that if someone's been hurt, because there seems to be a lot of hurt people, hurt by other people in the church, in the body, do you have, I know we walk them through forgiveness, we walk them through certain aspects of healing, but ultimately a lot of them will say, well, the hurt's still there.
We have a process that we would take people through in that. I mean, it's basically the transformation series process. Yeah. It's the same really on wherever your hurt or issue has come from, whether it's generational or now. Okay. True forgiveness is releasing people from the effect that what they did had in your life. That's true forgiveness. You cancel the debt. If there's no debt, there can be no hurt. And people say the words, I forgive that person, but they never cancel the debt of the effect that what that person did had on their lives, whether it's the effect that it had last week or 20 years ago. People can be still living in the effect of it because they never cancel the invoice. And that is the foundation of all our ministry, ensuring that people know that forgiveness is releasing people, not just forgiving the incident. Because if a seed of offense went in and put down roots of bitterness, it will produce fruits of resentment. And you can keep trying to chop off the fruit. It'll keep growing back. And often you just prune it in reality, and it grows back even more. If you try and dig out the roots and you don't deal with the seed, it will still put down new roots. So you have to deal with the seed of offense. What actually caused this to come into my life? Then I am going to forgive all the things that created or established or affected me by, and we use the form of an invoice. Make an invoice of this person hurt me, they did this, 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 and this, I need to forgive them and choose to forgive them for what they did, but actually on the invoices also, as a result of them doing this, this did this in my life, I felt this about myself, this hindered me in this, it stopped me doing this, it affected this. So I have a balance sheet against what was done as a seed of offense, and if I choose to release them from the debt outstanding, and therefore there is nothing to have emotions or things over. Now, when you release people, God is free to minister healing into your life. While you don't release somebody, you're chained to them, and God is not free to heal and restore and remove the pain and hurt because you're still attached to it. You know, and people say things like, you know, unforgiveness is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. It affects us more than anybody else. And actually, if we hold on to a person, it means God can't work in their life either in that area. So if someone has really harmed us and wronged us, by forgiving them, it allows God to work in their life in that issue so they don't do it to someone else. But when we keep it to ourselves, actually, it even stops God working in that person because we have held that issue and God isn't free. So we have to, it's our responsibility to ensure that we forgive and release. And I'm not saying that's an easy thing. You have to count the cost and be willing, and it isn't about getting your pound of flesh. Well, I've been hurt, therefore I want to get my own back. No, it's releasing getting your own back totally. There is no debt. You know, I use the illustration when I minister to people, you know, Someone, you know, in your terms, someone asked me to lend $10, you know, and I said, yeah, of course. And they said, well, I'll pay it back next week when I get my paycheck. I'll pay it back. That's fine. So next week comes, they don't pay it back. When I see the person, and immediately what I think about when I see the person is they owe me something. They owe me the money I lent them because they promised they were going to pay it back. Now, when I meet that person and I look at them, I'm not looking at them as a person. I'm looking at the fact that they owe me, and I am carrying that to them. Now, I can say to that person, I choose to forgive you for not paying the money back. Absolutely no problem. But if I don't cancel the debt that they still owe me, then if they don't pay it back, I'm still going to look at them because they owe me in a wrong way. If I say to them, look, I forgive you for not paying it back because that was the offense, but I actually remove that offense by saying you don't have to pay it back, then I can't look at that person as if they owe me anything because they don't, because I've canceled the debt. But if I only forgive them from the offense, and I don't cancel the debt, they still owe me. And so many people are walking around being owed what they think they deserve from other people. On a negative and a positive. You know, it isn't just what people did do, it can be what people didn't do. Yeah, my dad never told me he loved me, not once in his life. So he owed me a whole lifetime of being told, I love you. Now, when I cancelled the debt, I basically forgave him for not actually saying he loved me, which was the offence, but then I had to release him from the debt I was owed, and therefore I did not expect that of him. I released him from it. And then I then forgave him for how that affected my life, which was it made me look for love in the wrong places. And then that caused me to be hurt and damaged by looking for love in the wrong places emotionally. And then that screwed up my next relationship because that relationship was wounded by the first one and I have a mess emotionally. And then I get hurt to such a degree in my emotional stuff by a girl and I vow to close down my emotions and not be hurt again. So now I am now got a heart which is hard and is not giving out love. So that really affects my whole life. And if it affects me my whole life, then I now need to forgive my dad, not just for not telling me he loved me and not demonstrating that love to me, but the fact that it screwed up every relationship I ever had and got me into more trouble in anything else. Now, I had to, that was the invoice. I held that in account, and I chose to forgive him, and I released him from it, and then I had to go through and release and forgive each person that had hurt me and damaged me as a result of that. I had to forgive myself for going into that route in the first place. So in the end, I ended up free from all those things, and then God started to breathe life into my emotions and bring me back to a place of wholeness so that I could receive and give love and have a normal, healthy relationship in it. But it was a pretty heavy process for me personally, because it was such a difficult thing. But it changed everything, you know. And a lot of people are walking around wounded, carrying debts of heavy burdens, like balls and chains they're dragging around with them, because they've not released people from what they're owed. You know, and I think that really is the key to bringing people into freedom. Not looking for retribution or looking to be paid back, but cancelling it. Why? Because Jesus cancelled every debt outstanding against us and holds none of them against us. So we have no right, according to Matthew 18, to hold anything against anybody else, because he's cancelled the biggest debt there could ever be against me. Why should I hold, you know, in the illustration it was the person had the gross national debt of Israel outstanding against them, and it was cancelled, but then they wouldn't forgive one person who owed them a day's wages. And basically what it said was, and the master handed them over to the torturers, to the torture chamber, until they would forgive everything, basically. And when we do not forgive, it is like being in a torture chamber. The enemy can put and twist the knife in our life over and over and over again, because he has access to, because we have given him access, because we're not forgiven. And there's nothing that God can do to protect us from the enemy having a legal right to torture us if we're in forgiveness. Whether that comes out emotionally, spiritually, physically, it will be torture. And it's a huge issue in the church because of not dealing with hurts, being let down, being disappointed. Disappointment and injustice is one of the biggest issues towards unforgiveness. You know, if someone punches us in the mouth, then we have something that's really easy to recognize, and we've got a choice what we do with it. But it's not as easy in some of the emotional areas that we've been damaged in to recognize that. But if we open ourselves up to God and present ourselves as living sacrifices and allow him to open up those inward parts and search our hearts, then he will show us some of those hard areas in our hearts, some of those stony areas that have got memories of those things that are damaging our hearts, so that we can get our hearts re-established with good soil. You know? But for those who aren't willing to do it, they go on being tortured. And then cycles just repeat and repeat and repeat in their life. Because in essential roots of bitterness just bring bitter root judgments around and again and again and again. But, you know, the answers are all there in what Jesus said. Hey, let's love one another and forgive each other.
Yeah, that's good, Mike.
Okay. All right.
Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah, very good, Mike. Thanks.
Okie dokie. All right, well...